Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
This is a paid advertisement from BetterHelp Therapy Online. Have you ever struggled from fitting in? I know I have, particularly at school. I found it difficult to find out who I was on that journey of self-discovery. I started to see a therapist, and not only did I go on a journey of self-awareness and understanding, I became more resilient, my self-worth grew, and my mental health changed for the better. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try, because it's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you need to do is fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a therapist, and you can switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. With over 1,000 therapists in the UK already, BetterHelp can provide access to mental health professionals with a wide variety of expertise in mental health. Our listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/headstrong. That's betterhelp.com/headstrong. Hello and welcome to Headstrong. If this is your first time listening, first of all, thank you so much for tuning in. My name is Louis Strong and I host this show. On Headstrong, I interview guests in the public eye about their lives and their careers, but ultimately I want to talk to them about their vulnerabilities to understand what the word headstrong means to them. Joining me on this episode of Headstrong is the incredible musician Freya Ridings, who I saw for the first time probably about 4 or 5 years ago. And ever since then, I have followed her career, and she's got an exciting new album coming out, which I'm incredibly excited for, A, because I've heard it, and B, it is an absolute banger. But she was actually really open and honest with me about her dealings with things like a breakup, with her personal experience with lockdown, and also how important music is to her mental health. So I really hope you enjoy this episode of Headstrong. Freya, thank you so much for joining me on Headstrong. How are you doing?
Thank you so much for having me on Headstrong, Louis. I'm so good, thanks. I'm really excited for this chat. I actually love podcasts. For me, they're like one of my favorite. They're just like one of my favorite parts of the show. So yeah, I'm excited for this.
I love it. What do you listen to then? What kind of gets you going in a podcast?
Well, I love Fern Cotton's Happy Place. I feel like when I got to be on her podcast, like that was honestly such a high for me because I love her so much.
I love that. Where do you listen to your podcast? I always love to know where people kind of have their time. People are like driving, exercise. I listen to mine on a long dog walk. That kind of gets me going.
Nice. So, well, minus the dog, it's the walk, like walking through the forest and like the park, like that's like my happy place. I just find it kind of like being on the phone with like, you know, my mom or like a podcast. I feel like it just makes it kind of go a lot quicker. Like a walk with a friend is always quicker. So
yeah, 100%.
I like getting my steps.
Oh, got to get the steps in, 10,000 minimum. Come on.
Yeah, 100%. It's kind of changed my world recently because I feel like a year ago I didn't do it. I kind of got into it in lockdown and then kind of stopped. And then I guess it's been 3 years. So it's been a year of getting back into it. I just like that, just for your mental health as well. You feel so much fresher every day.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one of the most important things for me when I haven't done a long walk and had the fresh air. I think that's the most important thing, because that just gives me clarity and it gives me space to kind of pause and not even reassess, just like have a break from reality for a bit, switch off and get that fresh air. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. 100%. And there was on the Diary of a CEO podcast that I was listening to the other day, there was a guy like describing how he was like, oxygen is the opposite of like disease. And when he said that, I was like, that makes a lot of sense. Cause if you haven't had fresh air or like sunlight in that day, you do feel very different, you know? And the second you get that, you feel a lot more like awake and alive. So I love that. That was amazing.
I mean, you mentioned lockdown there. I'm incredibly excited because I have listened to your whole new album. I got sent it and it's super exciting. Blood Orange. I listened to the whole shebang and I'm not going to lie to you. I already loved your music and I am buzzing for this to come out. It's very, very exciting. But let's talk about inspiration. Blood Orange. I've heard you talk about it, but I want you to tell me about Blood Orange and the inspo.
So for me, like, I can only write off of personal experience. That's all I've ever done. From when I was like a 9-year-old, you know, singing about the, you know, being left out with girls at school, like to like my first crush, to like losing my big love, to like finding myself and rebuilding myself. It's just been my absolute go-to always to write about my own life. It's all I've ever known. So this Blood Orange is the last 3 years of my life, kind of like a time capsule. And I wanted to call it Blood Orange mostly because I wanted it to have a kind of 70s kind of organic but euphoric kind of influence in a kind of modern pop way, but also because there are two very distinguishable halves. I'd say the first 18 months of writing this album, I was like very kind of heartbroken and alone and struggling with a lot of things at that time, you know, kind of like looking like from the outside in, like I was doing really good, but actually really suffering with one of the sort of worst breakups of my life. And then the second 18-month half was like re-falling back in, much more euphoric and like joyful.
No, I honestly think it's absolutely fantastic. Now, it's coming out at the start of May.
Thank you.
It's got a really authentic, amazing sound. As you say, you're such a good storyteller with your voice and your music. It's awesome. Am I allowed to say any of the song title names? Or is that embargoed and secret?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay.
Yeah, go for it.
My absolute favorite song and absolute banger is Dancing in a Hurricane. My God, what a tune.
Dancing in a Hurricane was, I feel like, a real breakthrough moment for me on this album, because I've been really, really struggling, especially with the kind of heartbroken headspace of like working with other people. I was finding it really hard to open up. And I kind of went into this session with Lost Boy, who I love his work. He's done a lot of songs that I love, like with Griff and stuff. And Plested, an artist and writer that I've always really, really respected. He wrote like Forget You for with Lewis Capaldi. And I was really, really nervous. And they were just so lovely to me. And they were just really, really kind. And we just kind of talked about the influences I wanted to incorporate and the kind of joy. And also the idea of like, you know, there was no chance of playing big shows back then. But I was like, I want to rebuild myself and I don't want to wait to be happy anymore. Like, I don't want to wait. And like, we were just like, imagine if we were in the studio, but we were on the stage of Glastonbury right now, looking out across the people, like, you know, a sea of people, and the sun was going down. Like, what would we want to play them in this room that would make them feel like euphoric? And that was the two kind of worlds that came together. That idea of not wanting to just sort of just sit in the sadness. Like, if you can dance in the rain, it's like, there's nothing you can't do, you know?
So that completely translates. No, I'm totally not a music PR, but I'm telling you now that should be a single at some point. No, it is. That completely translates. What that makes me feel is like, it makes me want to get out of like a slump. You know, it makes me want to get up and be motivated and do stuff. It's great. I love it. Really, really great. Now, along with some of the other music on the album, am I right in saying that you may have written a song with your brother?
I did. Well, he's a co-writer on it because, yeah, there's a song called Wither on the Vine that is like, I really love on the album. Cause for me, it's like, you know, I was kind of coming into my own in terms of like saying what I wanted things to sound like in the studio. Before, I was kind of taking much more of a backseat. I was much more about just the lyrics, but this time sonically, I really wanted to have a vision and go for that. And yeah, Wither on the Vine, that's a phrase that my mum used to say a lot growing up. If I was, you know, being bullied at kids at school, she's like, and I was like, yeah, I just want to tell them like how upset I am. You know, she's like, wither on the vine. Like, just don't give it your energy, because like that's just not gonna, you know, give your energy to the things you want more of, not the things you want less of. And for me, I kind of translated it. I was still in that heartbroken kind of phase of the blood orange journey. And I was at home in lockdown, and I was like, I've had this idea. I kind of wrote it a cappella after seeing my ex like outside of a tube station, and I hadn't seen him for a really long time. And I came back and I was like so angry. And my brother basically was like, you need to finish that song. And I was like, yeah, I really want to. I was like, I just don't really have a chorus. So he helped me write the chorus, which is amazing. And I think he's honestly my favorite person in the world. We just went for a park walk, and I like, he's 21, he's called Arden Ridings. And I think he's just the most talented boy alive. And I'm really excited for his future, no matter what it is. But yeah, he helped me write it, which is really
That's sweet. So sweet. So are you guys really close? Because I know that music and kind of songwriting is very much in your family. It's a massive part of that. But is that something that you guys can relate to and link together? Like, do you play music together and sing along together? Or is that kind of less so a thing?
Not all together, but individually, I think, especially over lockdown and stuff, because I was having my album with no out help. Like, there was no record label, there was no feedback. So suddenly my family became like my A&R, like the feedback, the testing the songs out. And yeah, they're just, I think my brother's so incredible. I think he could be an A&R if he wanted. He's so incredibly like precise with his feedback, and he's so like empathetic and soul driven that he can like feel whether something's authentic to me or not, I think, better than most people. Maybe because we were like, you've grown up together. We have a 7-year age gap. So he's 21, I'm 28. But yeah, he's my absolute best friend. And I'm so, so grateful that we got that time to kind of reconnect, because I've been on tour for like 3+ years. I hadn't seen a lot of him. So it was really nice to have that moment and to kind of, yeah, just reconnect.
As you say, you write from personal experience, which in a way is, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but does it feel like a therapeutic activity for you? Is songwriting a way of you getting something off your chest and putting it in a song, a way to express yourself?
Yeah, I think songwriting is a therapeutic activity. I was maybe taking it a bit too far before, and it was all I was doing. Sure. And then over lockdown, I kind of got into doing like Zoom therapy, and I still do it. I've been doing it for like 2.5 years now.
Good.
And I'm really, really grateful to have two. Yeah, I think it's really good to be able to compartmentalize, like, this is what I do for fun and for my job, and to like overcome my fears. But it doesn't need to be the only place where I get that, you know, emotional outlet. I think it's important to kind of have balance, which is something that I wasn't very good at the first time round. So hopefully this time it's got more of a balance. But I'd say, yeah, this album, my goal was, I had a goal for a while, which was like, I wanted to impress people, and it was killing me. Like, it was crushing my soul. And I think, I don't know what happened over the lockdown, but it was like no one cared anymore. And I kind of found it so liberating. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to make the album that I actually want to make, and like, screw what happens. Like, I don't care. Like, I want to just say the things that really, really scare me. And I want to overcome my fears via every single song and just grow as a person. I feel like from your, you know, early to mid to late 20s, it's just such a time of like, just such quick growth that, yeah, I really wanted to document it. And I could have said things that were easier to say, for sure. But I really wanted to say the things that were almost embarrassing in the moment, but when you look back on them, you feel really proud you said them. Yeah.
No, I love that. I really, really like that.
This is a paid advertisement from BetterHelp Therapy Online. Have you ever struggled from fitting in? I know I have, particularly at school. I found it difficult to find out who I was on that journey of self-discovery. I started to see a therapist, and not only did I go on a journey of self-awareness and understanding, I became more resilient, my self-worth grew, and my mental health changed for the better. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try, because it's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you need to do is fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a therapist, and you can switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. With over 1,000 therapists in the UK already, BetterHelp can provide access to mental health professionals with a wide variety of expertise in mental health. Our listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/headstrong. That's betterhelp.com/headstrong.
I want to talk to you about heartbreak, because it is an area that you've talked about before, as in terms of your music. And I think it's a really important subject. But, you know, what I love is listening to music and actually being able to relate to somebody, because you can talk, you know, a song can really resonate with somebody because it's actually about that raw emotional feeling about heartbreak.
Yeah.
So was that a way how you coped with heartbreak? Yeah. You listened to music and that's the way you resonate with it?
Yeah. 100%. Like, firstly, I'm so sorry you're going through that. It's like, there is no pain like it, I don't think. I think it's such an you can't really, there's no painkiller for it apart from, I think, like feeling understood in any way that you can find. And I think music does take on this higher purpose when you're going through that pain. It's kind of really interesting. Like, I had I'm really scared of needles, and I had like some blood tests recently. Like, it's all good, all safe. But I was really scared of the pain. I was so scared. And I don't know what happened, but I immediately just started like going like, ooh, and I just started like making like notes. And it was so interesting to me because I suddenly had this breakthrough that I was like, oh my God, every time that I've turned to the piano or singing or a song is because I'm in emotional pain and that's how I can cope with it. And my mom said when she was giving birth to me, she sang the whole time. And I was like,
absolutely amazing.
That makes so much sense. But that's the thing is, like, I think we think of it as like, oh, like music and heartbreak, they're always hanging out. But I think they're intrinsically linked. I don't know how someone could get through it without finding those songs or writing those songs that helps them through it. Like, when I watch Love Island and someone's like had their heart like crushed, I just want to like send in like a ukulele or like a piano or something. I'm like, you need to sing. I was like, you need to sing or like dance or like find a song that just sets your soul alight and just reminds you who you are, like what you're going to rebuild yourself into, and also just allows you to feel, you know? Because someone said, like, I've been thinking about this quote a lot recently, I don't even know where I heard it, and it was like, so many people have died trying to run from emotions, but no one's ever died of feeling them. Mm. And I was like, I think feeling them is sometimes just the scariest thing on the planet, but via music, it just makes it a little bit more bearable and joyful, you know?
Honestly, I completely agree. I've been saying that you've got to feel the feelings. And I know that sounds so cliche and so ridiculous, but actually, if you keep putting it off, or if you go for a rebound, or you kind of go distract yourself with alcohol or whatever. No, I think actually, and I'm very happy to admit this, I'm more than happy to accept my emotions and cry. You know, I think that's a really important part of the journey. I have a question for you. When was the last time you cried?
Oh my God, wait, let me think. Oh, actually, what was it? Like, sad cry or happy cry?
Let's go for both. Let's not keep our listeners too unhappy.
I think, what was sad cry? Oh, the other night I was feeling like, just really kind of, I just got hit by this kind of wave of like, we've had such an intense few months of releasing music again. And I've waited so long to release this music and we got to play on Graham Norton. And that's like a life goal, like a childhood dream of mine. And I didn't think it would vaguely be a possibility this year, let alone for this album. And I don't know, it just kind of hit me that, you know, something that I've aimed towards for so long has happened. And I'm on the other side of it now, and I just kind of, I felt this little dip, and I just like, I had a bit of a cry, but it was kind of joy and like fear that I'll never reach that again. I was like, it was just a weird kind of, especially when you're just going at such incredible speed after years of just being at home or working in the studio, it's very kind of like cocoon, and then suddenly you're out of the cocoon, you know, and there's just a lot more stimulation coming your way, which I love, but I think sometimes it just hits me and you just have to let it out. And apparently when I heard a podcast, another podcast, they got different tiers from different emotional states, like anger and sadness and joy. And they like, they crystallized them, or like they took out the liquid and they crystallized them. And they were completely different shapes depending on like what you were feeling when you cried. And the angry ones were all like jagged. Mm. And then the happy ones were kind of a lot more like symmetrical. And I just thought that was really, really interesting. It's like, we just need to, it shouldn't even be vaguely taboo. It's so much more dangerous not to let stuff out than it is to let stuff out.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, do you know what? Someone I spoke to recently, who I interviewed, said, it's all very well and good, actually, though, talking about it. But the most important thing is, who's there to listen? Because you actually need, you know, it's all very well and good getting it off your chest. And you do go, oh, I do feel so much better. But then someone could go, oh God, you know, whatever, you know, or disregard it or not be listening. And actually, do you know what? Sometimes you do need that shoulder of support. You do need that advice. And be that professional or personal. It's so important to actually just reach out to somebody and go, can we just chat for 5 minutes? You know? And I think that's really, that's such a good strength, isn't it?
It is a massive strength. I think a lot of the time, like when you can feel yourself wanting to go into a shell and wanting to like reclude yourself from people, it's like, that's the moment when you need to reach out to someone. And it's not always the easiest thing to do, especially when on the outside, you look like you've got it all together. It's really hard to tell someone that you're struggling, even if it's just for that day or like a week, you know, like if you're having a bit of a dip, it's kind of like, yeah, finding those people who you trust their wisdom and their advice implicitly, and people who really know you and care about you, even if it's very few, like fingers of one hand, I think it's still really important. Yeah.
Okay, Freya, we're going to turn back the clocks. We're going to go back to Freya growing up as a child.
Yeah.
Can you always remember music being a part of your life?
Yeah, I do. My mum would sing me, and then when my brother came along, my brother to sleep with songs, and we'd get a rubby back, and that was like our nighttime routine. And we used to ask for different. It was iconic. I'm not gonna lie. And when I did babysitting when I was a little bit older, when I was in my teens, I would always give the kids like a little rubby back and a song, and they got to bed so quickly because they didn't want to risk losing the song or the rubby back.
What would the song be? What's the go to rubby back song?
So my mum would always do one of sort of three songs. She'd do Every Time We Say Goodbye by Etta James, which is still like, that song slays me every single time. And then there's a song from the film The Three Amigos called, I don't know what the song is, but they sit around the campfire and they sing it.
Isn't it such a good song? What a film. And I haven't heard that for ages.
We call it Bumbi Dee Dee, but it's that song around the campfire. It's like, Bumbi Dee Dee, Bumbi Dee Dee, Boom. It's really, yeah, I like that song. We'd ask for the cowboy song. That was that one. And then I think there's one called Blue Lagoon. I can't remember, but those are the two main ones. Yeah.
Oh, that's lovely. Now, when you were growing up, was there that, dare I say, pressure to get into music? Or was it just very much a part of your life and your own personal desire and passion and, of course, natural talent and skill?
Well, thank you for saying that. But I think because I watched my dad love it so vehemently, like his love for acoustic guitars are just all around our house. My mum plays the piano and like Celtic harp. We had a really old piano growing up, like the keys were literally crumbling off it. And I think watching their love for it just made it seem just that's what you did. You wrote your own songs, you played them and you sang them. And that's what I always thought that people did. But for me, I was like really into like rebelling. I was like, I'm going to, you know, play like violin, or I'm going to do something that you can't really sing with as easily. But truthfully, I couldn't keep away from it. Like, you know, my dad would go off of like film sets for like months, and I'd sneak into his room and like play the acoustic guitar, even though I could only play like individual notes, and try and sing over it. So eventually, I think it was like my 11th birthday, he bought me my own guitar. And it was so crazy because I was sat on this little treehouse ledge and all my uncles and aunts were around me. Didn't have many mates my own age, but that's all right. But I was playing his guitar and I was showing everyone a song I'd written. And he came out and he's like, there's still a video of this somewhere. It freaks me out. And he's like, Freya, you can't play my guitar anymore. And I was like, what? And then he's like, because you've got your own. And he gives me like this like cherry red wood, I know, like Takamine guitar. And I was like, yeah. He told me I could only get either an iPod mini or a guitar. And I was doing a really long commute to school. And I was like, I need an iPod more than anything because that's what I really need. But I wanted the guitar so badly. I didn't think, and that to this day might be the best gift I've ever got for any birthday or Christmas. Yeah.
Yeah. Without that guitar, Freya, where would we be?
I don't know. Because that was the guitar I went to all the open mic nights with. So yeah, I don't know.
That's incredible. Yeah. Now I want to talk about your identity there. I mean, you briefly touched on it there about, you know, struggling to fit in and make friends when you were younger. Did you struggle with your identity then growing up? And why do you think that was?
I think growing up, I was like, I really imprinted on like, you know, my parents and my godparents. They're all like actors and musicians and artists, and they're just incredible, vivacious, like very sort of outgoing people, very kind of thespian. And I grew up being like one of them. Like I put on like shows and we'd do like immersive like theatre together in the front room, and I'd like make little tickets and sell them for 20p, and I'd be like, come to the show. And I loved life before school. I really did. And I was so excited to go to school. I was like, I can't wait to meet people my own age and make friends. And I went to school, and it was suddenly like all of the things that I'd been taught were valuable, you know, like being honest and being like yourself. And it just suddenly seemed like that was the opposite. It was like the currency kind of shifted, and, you know, standing out was bad, and it meant that you were a target, and it meant that people didn't like you. And I was just so shocked by that, because I was always like taller, and I was always like a redhead. So that makes you stand out anyway. But I think I was so shocked by this that I just kind of shut down, and I went into my own shell, and I basically didn't come out of it for like 14 years until I basically left school. I honestly think my biggest goal in life is to reclaim the little girl I was before I went to school, because she was amazing. Like, she was like indomitable. I would go to anyone in a cafe, full fairy dress, like welly boots, and be like, hey guys, like, it's nice to meet you. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I was so outgoing. And I think trying to get back to that place where people were, you know, a safe space instead of a dangerous space, is like, that's how I feel now. You know, I look out into a sea of faces at Glastonbury, and it feels like those are my people. But school, it really wasn't my people. I don't know what it was. I don't think it brings out the best in anyone. But I think, yeah, when it comes to bullying, and like, it's just like the Wild West. Like, you're never put in that situation basically ever again. But getting through it was really hard. It's some of the hardest years of my life, I think.
Yeah, I mean, and you also struggled as well in terms of the educational side of it. And I know you went to the Brit School, which is a performing arts school, which is wonderful. But you've also said before that you had dyslexia, right?
Yeah.
And that also makes life so difficult, because it's something that you quite literally can't help. And it's so difficult. Sometimes kids don't understand that. They can't differentiate that. Did that play an important part to the kind of bullying, dare I say?
Yeah, I think there was a double-edged sword, because it's easy to make friends because you're having to focus so hard on your schoolwork. And I remember I would literally, like, everyone else would be chatting to each other and like making friends during the work, and I would be focusing so hard, and I would literally have only got like a couple sentences sort of downtime to chat with people because I was trying so hard. But yeah, I think it basically meant that it was probably the worst environment I could possibly be in, because I'd gone from an environment where it was all like sitting around the kitchen table, like verbal storytelling, like singing, like performing. And these are still things that I love to this day. Like, if this was a written, you know, question, and I had to write it with a pen, this would probably take me back singing. That's like where I come alive. And none of that involves holding a pen, you know? So it's kind of interesting what's valued and what isn't. Because I think storytelling and songwriting, or writing in general, is such a, you have to have a pen in your hand. But it actually has so little to do with that. It's wild.
So when you write out of, for example, then, because of, yes, we just talked about there, you have dyslexia, and, you know, it's not about picking up that pen and writing it, which I totally get. So do you kind of listen to some music, kind of like, you know, like backing tracks and stuff, and you can hear the words come to you, and you write it in your head and then write it down, or what? Talk me through your process.
So it's really interesting. Like, for the whole first album, I basically didn't pick up a pen for that. Like, I didn't. And I still to this day don't really know the notes or the chords that I'm playing. No idea, really. I do it purely based off of emotion and shapes and what feels right. And in a weird way, I think it's kind of like a secret advantage, because I don't know any restrictions. You know, I don't know what this chord shouldn't go with this chord. I just go on what feels right to me. And yeah, I sit basically at the piano or just like a cappella and just kind of sing. Like, I always shut my right eye, which I found out, I look like a pirate in the studio. It's like, I always have mascara under this eye. I don't know why. Because basically I stream of consciousness it, but it's from the right-hand side of your brain is like the creative side. So I think when you get to shut that, you kind of go into like a half, like, you know, like a pre-dream kind of theta alpha state, where you kind of can, you're not thinking with your conscious brain anymore. It's coming from a much deeper, like, back of the brain kind of place. And that's the place that I like to try and write from. It's not easy. And it is scary, and it feels vulnerable. And sometimes you do end up crying a bit. Sometimes you end up feeling euphoric. It's just, you never know what you're going to dig up. but it's like, it's the sand under the water, you know, you're like, you're not really sure what's under there, but sometimes you get some little nuggets of stuff that you're like, oh wow, that feels really authentically true. So then once I do the stream of consciousness, I then go through it, like my voice memos, and I try and pinpoint things or phrases or choruses or ideas that feel true to me and that really stick with me. And if they get stuck in my head as well, I'm like, okay, that's a good sign. So yeah, it's kind of a digging for mud, sieving for gold kind of situation. My mom's always like, she's a writer as well. And when she starts a page, she always writes at the top of the page, like, I'm just digging for mud. Like, there's no pressure.
Oh, I'm going to steal that. Thank you, Mrs. Ridings.
I know. She's so clever. She really is.
Oh, I love that. Now, I want to talk about touring with you, because I know that you were in Australia when lockdown happened. But ultimately, as well, touring can be, I can imagine, a lonely place. You're away for quite often months, if not years at a time. You're away from your family and friends. It's a break from reality. Your sleep schedule is completely messed up. You're eating and drinking at bizarre times. And it just throws you around a little bit for your mental health. So what's that like?
Like, touring is simultaneously one of the greatest loves of my life and also one of the scariest things that I ever do. I love it. But basically for me, I can see why, like you said, a lot of the things that it's kind of like, you know, like, what is it, total wipeout, when you have to jump on those massive balls and you just get like thrown off in different directions. It kind of feels like every day is like that, and you never know what you're going to get thrown or which direction you're going to get thrown. And for me, it's like, for me, going up to having a tour bus and being able to know where I was going to sleep and to be able to bring snacks on the bus that I know are like are healthy and feel good to me, and have my kettle to be able to make tea, like that to me was a huge step up in quality of tour life. Because for me, sleep is everything. Like, I am basically like a massive hamster on tour. Like, sometimes my band are like, literally, there's like bedding just like exploding out of your bunk. And I'm like, yes, I have so much bedding and I will sleep as much as I possibly can, because I give so much, you know, on stage. And I kind of treat it almost like a sort of health retreat, because I think you're already under so much stress, you're in different places every day. If you don't take your health really seriously, like, you just can't risk like not turning up for your band. They're turning up for you in the cold and the rain, or you know, they've had a hard day at work and they're still coming out on public transport to see you. You're like, I'm turning up for them and I'm giving them everything I've got. But yeah, it's lonely. Once I got a band that I really clicked with, they were some of my favourite tours ever. But yeah, if you're struggling with heartbreak like I was in Australia, I remember being so jet lagged and so tired. And I was like, I don't know how long I can keep doing this. But then you have 2-3 years off and I've never missed anything more in my life.
Mm.
But for me, I think it was because the balance was out of kilter. Like, the reason why I love music is because I sing about the people I love and I can tell them things that I can't say to their face. It's one of my favorite things in the world, because it's like walking out onto stage in a country you've never been to before, maybe, or a city you've never been to. And you already know you love that room of people and they're your people. Like, that's an incredible feeling. And I think for me, I just want to be braver with my show and I want to stand up, which really scares me to stand up and sing.
Mm.
And I want to like perform more, and I want to like really build it like as a show, not just like as a musical show, like as a, like, you know, with the lighting and like the costume changes, and I'm going to have real brass and like just everything. I just want to elevate for this next tour.
So you talk about sleep there being like one of your amazing coping mechanisms, but what else do you do to kind of look after your mental health then?
So this is my number one, actually. So I do basically like a diary every night. Some people say journal, but it's just one a day. And this is my, how old am I? This is my 12th year of doing it.
Wow.
So I have 12 years of my diaries, which is 12 years every day. Yeah, minus a couple that I might have missed along the way. But that's basically a huge chunk of my life. Wow. Yeah. And I'd say that basically is my best tool for like not getting overwhelmed.
So no matter how crazy
the day is, it can never be more. Yeah.
Do you use that to reflect? Do you use it to write down, to learn? Like, what's your process? Because I know that so many people don't do this, and it's such a good technique and tool.
Yeah. I think for me, it's basically about accountability and to feel like you've got your own back and you're looking after yourself. Kind of like you check in with a friend, you know, and you can do it with that element of kind of self-compassion, which can really help you overcome some of the day. Like, I just like breaking it down so it doesn't feel like this overwhelming thing, you know. All I'm ever trying to do is, like, I have my little stickers as well, which is like my daily little goals. And if I get my stickers, then I've had a good day. And if I didn't get my stickers, then I need to look at that and think about getting them tomorrow, you know. And I can't fall off the wagon too much without seeing it happen, you know, because days turn into months, turn into years, and it's like you don't know where they went. But with the diary, you can be like, oh, there they are, you know.
No, it's such a good thing that you're doing. I really love that. I want to know, what's been the biggest pinch yourself moment so far in your career? Because you've met so many people, do so many cool things. What's been that moment where you've kind of, if you could look at it outside of being Freya Run, you could go, oh my God, I can't believe that happened.
There's a couple. I think like playing Glastonbury was definitely a highlight, because me and my dad used to watch Glastonbury every year on the TV growing up, and it was so ridiculously iconic that I couldn't fathom being on that stage. I could keep seeing, like, it was the John Peel stage, and it's like 20,000 people, and it was so surreal to be playing, you know, a song that I'd written in my parents' front room and having that be played at Glastonbury. I was like, Jesus Christ. It kind of felt like a real moment for the first time in my whole life. I was like, they can't take, my mum was like, this is a bar you cannot fall below. And I was like, thank you, mum. Because I used to apply to their breakthrough artist thing every year, and I would never get it. So to actually be there, like, legitimately, I was like, this is so cool. This is so cool. And then there were some other insane times. You know, when you meet people who you've kind of grown up idealizing, or like just really, really famous people that you're like, mother of God, you're like, that's in front of my own eyes. Like, even on Graham Norton, it was like getting to meet Helen Mirren. I was like, wow.
That's amazing.
And we had a great chat afterwards. And she's just so iconic. I feel like she is the literal queen. And she was like, oh, we did two takes of the performance that I did. And she's like, I'd definitely go for the second one. Like, because I was asking her opinion. She's like, yes, like, it's easy to sort of overthink these things, but I think the second one, you'd really warmed up into it. I was like, thank you so much. And then she's like, well, what do I know? And I was like, well, you're doing we just had a good moment. And I was like, mother of God, like, my parents are actors. Like, that's iconic. So cool.
Oh,
yeah.
That's so amazing. Fred, I've really enjoyed talking to you. You're very, what I imagine your family's like as well. Just full of energy, as you say, vivacious and just happy. You're good spirit. But my final question I ask every guest is, what does the word headstrong mean to you?
Oh my God, I love this question. So I'd say being headstrong is like my favorite characteristic in myself and other people that I admire, because I think basically like grit and determination is that's what it is. It's just the determination to just not let go, even when everything else is like, you know, sort of shaking you, you hold on. And I think it's an incredible life skill, and I think it's something that should be championed much more, like just the indomitable strength of not letting go. I think more children should be seen like that's a good thing. It's not pushy or impatient. It's like, you know what you want and like holding on for it, playing the long game. And my favorite quote actually ever is a quote from Batman. We have a Batman mask in the front room, just to remind me.
Love that.
And it's what you do in the dark that puts light. And I love that. That to me is headstrong.
A great answer. Freya, thank you so much. Seriously, it's really, really kind of you. I wish you all the best of luck with Blood Orange. I'm super excited.
Thank you so much, Luke.
And that's it for this episode of Headstrong. Thank you so much for listening. Please do go hit like, subscribe, follow us on all our social media, including TikTok, Instagram, and of course, for our new filmed content on YouTube. We're really excited for what the rest of the year has to bring.
So we would love to have you along for the journey. This is a paid advertisement from BetterHelp Therapy Online. Have you ever struggled from fitting in? I know I have, particularly at school. I found it difficult to find out who I was on that journey of self-discovery. I started to see a therapist, and not only did I go on a journey of self-awareness and understanding, I became more resilient, my self-worth grew, and my mental health changed for the better. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try, because it's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you need to do is fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a therapist, and you can switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. With over 1,000 therapists in the UK already, BetterHelp can provide access to mental health professionals with a wide variety of expertise in mental health. Our listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/headstrong. That's betterhelp.com/headstrong.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.